Oh. listening to Radio Music Gallery on CKLN 88.1 in Toronto. My name's Alan Davis, and Paul Hodge is engineering. I'll get rid of my cold, and we'll see you again next week. This is Claude Rongier weekend at the Music Gallery, so drop by and see some of it. Good night.
The following public service announcement contains explicit language. The message is part of a campaign promoting active, safer sex practices.
There's no reason to be shy about insisting on condoms.
Even if you know your sex partners really well, there's no way of knowing what their former partners' lives were like.
One of them could have come into contact with the virus that causes AIDS.
So even if you've been in a relationship for a couple of years, it's never too late to start practicing safer sex.
Whether you're with an old friend or a new one, use a condom when you fuck.
These ideas were brought to you by Utility Grade in cooperation with Safe Sex Corps.
Hi. CKLN.
This is CKLN. 88.1.
They can't maintain the linearity. It can't be done on radio.
Always sound like that?
It always sounds like
yeah,
that.
It sounds different this week, doesn't it?
Well, there must be some embeds.
It has a warble to it that I hadn't heard before. You know, now I wonder if
I don't think we got that far before for
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
We've aborted it earlier. So what's the name of this show, Mike?
This is a show with no name, Bob. I was pondering that this week. I was wondering.
Oh, I forgot to phone somebody. Tell them to listen to me.
Oh, really?
Forget it.
Oh, I told you. I can make a quick call.
Okay, I'll get you later and call that guy. I forgot to call another guy.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Call that's all right, yeah. Okay. What time is it?
Show with no
Let's
name.
Let's start the show in
show
10 minutes.
Show with no name.
Okay.
Everyone else has a name. Why don't I have a name?
Now, you have something to talk about.
It's not important.
No, I was I don't want to take my interruption.
No, this phone call is really important. Yeah. I can talk and you can make the phone call.
Yeah, I'm just trying to be sad.
Sad?
Yeah.
Why are you sad?
Because I didn't phone them.
Who can you let me in on this?
No.
Oh.
They only pass through this area every 400 years. Oh. We have to wait another 400 years for them.
We'll be here.
Yeah, we will.
We'll be here. I was thinking perhaps we could talk a little bit about brain transmitters. Do you know anything about brain transmitters?
Well, I'm one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm one.
Well, I'm thinking in terms of the brain transmitters used by the CIA.
Oh, Operation Mind Control.
Yeah.
They use the CN Tower. That's been documented. That's the invisible Third World War, is the microwave warfare, psionics.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, but I think you might have. So you have something particular?
I got a pamphlet here from, maybe you've heard of this gentleman. His name is Marty Koski.
No.
He's from Finland.
Yeah.
And he claims to have been part of an RCMP experiment back in the 50s, wherein a brain transmitter was implanted, and he started to hallucinate, and lived in Finland, went back to Finland, and then came back to Canada to pursue some sort of action, and nothing happened. He was tossed off as being insane, and then he's gone back to Finland, but is making a plea with this booklet and notes and information and sources.
Well, I don't know that particular case, but having listened to Mae Brussels tapes for 8 years, 7 to 8 years, there was at least two people every year would show up on some major newspaper with that complaint and would be filing something in the courts. But you never heard what happened to them. Mae was pretty good at following up, but they kind of dwindled off. So this has been a common occurrence since the 60s, and Walter Bowert's book, Operation Mind Control, documents the possibility that was done to Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yeah.
But that book is very hard to get. Give me a call if you want to know where to get it. It's a rare book.
Okay. Well, it's interesting because this gentleman had spent some time in Canada and would be, he refers to MK Ultra, CIA experiments. And I could read to you a little bit about his story if you like.
Well, if you have something interesting, one thing is that that procedure, which is dated in the 1560s, is putting something in a person.
Yeah.
They now have devices. I saw this on TV Ontario in 1981, it's interesting, it's exactly 7 years ago in August, 81, when everybody was at the cottage. TV Ontario put on a show called Best Kept Secrets, and they showed this little gadget that they could aim it across somebody across the street and make him walk in any direction. So they could, you know, mold your brainwaves to make your body do what it wanted to do without anything planted in you. So this is an old technology.
Mm-hmm.
And that was on TV, and I got it on tape.
Oh, really?
All right, so you go into this as a bit of nostalgia.
Well,
with the old form of control.
Well, what had happened with this gentleman, Marty Kosky, was he was hearing voices, and he thought he was going insane. And it wasn't normal to hear voices, and mine were with me for 2 to 3 hours every day. I felt they came at me through the ceiling from the suite above me. But I wasn't really worried. I had resigned myself to the thought I was suffering from some sort of neurotic disorder, impossible to get rid of, but harmless enough. So then things get progressively worse, and after years of this talk, he began to lose control of his normal body functions and emotions. It was as if someone or something could control my sleep, my sense of smell and taste. Food was by turn made to taste very salty or very acidic. Sexual functions, urination, bowel movements, and basic metabolism all were affected. Finally, I couldn't even work. By now, the voices were with me 24 hours a day. I was being talked to every waking hour. I was allowed minimal sleep, about an hour a day. I left my apartment, and I immediately became very drowsy, yet indoors I could not sleep. For the first time, the voice identified itself. It told me it was a spokesman for the RCMP and that I had been selected for training as a spy. The first phase of my training would be to learn how to survive in a Russian insane asylum. The hospital would serve as my training ground. And on and on and on.
You know, just as I think of it, if you know where that guy is, we'll send him Mae Brussels' phone number, and she can get him in touch with the 30 other people that she has on her files, and they should unionize or you know, organize as a lobby. This guy's not alone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, that's what he says. He supplements his theories with articles on the CIA experiments done at McGill in the 50s, and cites actually conditions that other people have experienced that were similar to his from other parts of the world. So, yeah, anyways, his address is here.
He knows of a few people.
But that's why this book is put out. He's looking for support and contacts, so...
Well, it just occurred to me, you know, that book came out in the late 70s by Julian Jaynes, a U of T professor, called The Origins of the Bicameral Consciousness or something. It was based on a theory that Western rational man shut down the ability to hear voices and all that, and that before literacy, man heard all kinds of voices, was generally natural to be in a schizophrenic state, and, of course, experienced a lot of trance phenomena and channeling, which we see happening again under electric conditions. Can you hear me, Mike?
Yeah.
Yeah. It feels a little dense. But that book, it just occurs to me, is giving an abstract theory of why people are hearing, well, heard many voices in the past and may be hearing it now. That book could have been a MKUltra prop-up job to explain away, theoretically, the fact that many people have been implanted with this stuff, and that's the reason they're hearing voices, not because of some breakdown of the bicameral mind.
No, that it's a natural phenomenon.
Well, he says it's a natural phenomenon, and he's trying to make it feel natural, so we'll call Julian and get him in touch with Klosky there. And,
we can pull him down here some night, I don't mind.
Sure, get him on the phone at least.
Okay, well, do you have something that is remotely related to the Church of the Subgenius?
Yeah, introduce me.
We haven't done that. We do that. We're just so casual and so slack.
It's a midnight hour.
And I catch myself and I realize I haven't introduced you. The man sitting across from me is J.R. Bob Dobbs of the Church of the Subgenius. And my name is Mike, and we're here until 2 o'clock. We're here for another...
And Bob's here as long as he can.
Another 15 minutes or so.
Twenty-two minutes.
I'm flexible, Bob.
Yeah. The point is, I'm a remarkable person, and that's why I'm part of your show. And I do have an opening item which should be of real interest to everybody, and you too, Mike.
Lay it on me, Bob.
Yeah, what happened is that the Guinness Book of Records got in touch with me.
Recently?
Yeah, they called me up, called my office, and they've heard of my boasts. And they know I claim to be the happiest man, the most slack-filled person who ever lived in history. You know, the happiest person who ever will live and did live. They heard about that. So they want to see if my claim is accurate. So they're going to come over to my place and monitor my lifestyle for a week, maybe 22 days, 3 weeks.
Sure.
They're going to monitor me. And if I pass all their standards of what they think happiness is, then I am going to be declared the happiest man who ever did live and will live.
So people at Guinness always need some sort of proof. I mean, if you sit in a wheelchair for 180 days, you have to have that proof.
Yeah.
So this is what they're doing in your case.
So in my case, they have to see how I interact with normal daily stresses and joys and pleasures of life. And so they'll be monitoring all my life with Connie. And I'm going to let them do that. I know that I'm monitored anyway, so it's no invasion of my privacy. And I know that those guys are probably going to be so ecstatic around me, they'll probably... publish the results, chuck the book, and want to be parts of my church and forget about the, you know, this encyclopedic effort of the world records job.
So a couple of British oligarchs are going to come over and hang around. They may be coming down to CKL at some point.
They may come in, They may be, part, of course, they'll have to monitor to be
over
on
23 the days. They're going to hit one Wednesday at least.
Yeah. All right, so we can look forward to that, eh? See if I pass the test to support my boast.
That's exciting, Bob.
Yeah.
Nice to know I'm a part of that.
You'll be given honors to be associated with.
I know I've lent many chuckles to you over the last year.
You made me very happy, mate. All right, on to the next item. Oh, I got a... That was personal. I think I should give a pattern before we go to the saying tape.
Did you say a pattern?
A pattern.
A pattern.
Some kind of pattern.
Going into radio lingo. You say that in radio.
No, those are platters. This is not a platter-tude. This is a pattern-tude.
Okay.
Or pattern recognition. This is the Bob Knowledge pattern. I read a recent interview with Frank Zappa where he was appalled at the conformity of the 80s. He says, phenomena like the fundamentalist rise in ratings and influence in the White House and that kind of stuff wouldn't have been thought of. That form of conformity wouldn't have been thought of in the 60s, he claims. All right? So he is literally shocked by the conformity of the 80s. I think that he might be unaware of a particular aspect of Bob Knowledge, which I'm going to explain to him why there's a trend of conformity in the 80s. You see, in North America, which was basically a radio-visual culture, radio is a hot medium, it's acoustic, simultaneous, but it has a visual effect, a visual bias effect on North Americans, and that's what happened in the 30s and 40s. When television came in, at that point in the 50s and 60s, we're leaning towards content analysis here. There was mainly just one or two stations in Canada, CBC, CTV, a very short number of choice of program selection compared to the 80s, right? So the Americans, being visually biased, interpreted it as a blanket imposition of mass mind, the 60s, 50s and 60s, the TV world, all right? They saw it as a major imposition of some kind of uniformity. So to counterbalance it, the public reacted by going into a decentralized mode, fragmenting, setting up Berlin walls in their private lives, divorcing whatever, generation gaps, politically splitting off, separatist movements, all this fragmentation, what we'd call centrifugal forces, flying away from the center, all right? All those manifestations of a decentralizing from the centralizing effect and interpretation of TV as an imposition of mass uniformity. Now, when in the late 70s, early 80s, when computers, personal computers, and Walkman, and many choices of, what do they call it, narrow broadcasting, you know, much variety of information, and also with video recorders, you can select your program and listen to it at your pace, at your own time. So you're not imposed. If you wanted to watch Ed Sullivan in the 60s, you'd have to be there at a certain time, right? So with the sort of left hemisphere fine-tuning of the electric environment for privatization of the electric service environment. All right, the privatization, we'll call it, Walkmans, VCRs, and personal computers. And note, the personal computers have a print content which hoiked up visual values, too. Now, as a result of that emphasis on personalized time rates, paces of lifestyle, and that, really independent from the mass uniform effect of the 60s, the public always, as an archetype, always wants to balance the effect that they think is obvious. Therefore, with this increased fragmentation of society, in other words, a more decentralizing than they imagined to be in the 60s, then the public wanted to compensate by becoming centripetal, the opposite of centrifugal. They wanted to move toward the center. So they hoiked up a pattern as a trend for the 80s to, like the 19th century in visual space terms, impose uniformity in the Victorian era for a different reason. As a content kind of fad, they hoiked up uniformity on a surface level as agreeing to basic merging with the Reagan or conservative image of preservation of some kind of sense of massive community, right? Mass man, mental merging, don't argue, don't rock the boat kind of thing. And this affected the younger generation in the 80s strongly, and the adults, they just ran. They just loved it, right? You know, in the 80s, the old people. So you see, the mass uniformity effect was hoiked up as a fad and a trend in the 80s as a counterbalance to the incredible real ground of fragmentation that was happening to the privatization of electronic services. So when Zappa's complaining about conformity in the 80s, he doesn't see the ground, the real technological environmental effects that's causing that temporary fad. Of course, this will flip with further technological developments in the 90s. So it's not something to be worked up over. I mean, you just have to go through it as a minor discarnate person within this mass man phenomenon, right? So you dig that?
Well, Frank tends to be very critical of the younger generation. Over the past few years, I've noticed he's made comments about the younger generation.
Well, he criticizes their apathy, their lack of a sense of civil responsibilities, like voter registration, and not aware, concerned of history or where things are going, or where they came from. In other words, categorized knowledge, conventional. Actually, historical, literate kind of knowledge. He does have a literate bias there for, and he demands that of generations, which is a good thing. I mean, if the kids are whacked out on electronic simultaneity anyways, they need to have some reminder of what's been. But I think I don't know if he's personally confused or concerned about it and bothered. If he's losing his slack, then I suggest he study a little of Bob knowledge so that he not be so concerned about it, because it will rectify itself. Mm-hmm. This generation is going to be incredibly... Well, I'll tell you later what it's going to be in future shows, but it's going to be what it ain't, doesn't seem to be now. You know what I mean?
Well, you have a way of leaving
us. Yes, because I've talked too long. I mean, that's a whole other topic.
Let's just, for nostalgia's sake, let's play...
Stay. Remember that old voice of the anti-conformist mode? See, he's a guy. That's why his stuff maybe doesn't last too long, because he is basically against anti-conformity, so he is a throwback to the 60s attitude. He's a centrifugal force. He's advocating moving away from the center. And only I can handle and carry on the church with full comprehensive awareness and not bugged by present trends, whatever they are, and in whatever decade.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go down to Dallas then, and the old church headquarters, the Church of the Subgenius, Ivan Stang. We'll be right back, won't we?
Yep.
Gone cat, old great daddy-o from outer space. Oh, give me warning, old space creature, E-I-I. Give me the signal, E-I-I. Hideous alien monster creatures from the beyond world.
In an unfinished room in the Salem Custom House.
Yes, sir. Can I help you?
I doubt it.
Well, in that case, if you'll be...
No one can help me.
Yes, sir. Well,
not that anyone's ever tried, of course.
Is that so?
Hardly worth anyone's while, really, is it?
I'm sorry, sir.
Where the defense is in being kind or helpful to a robot if it doesn't have any gratitude, Sophie?
And you don't.
And think to yourself, there's no place like home. There's no place like home.
The 140-year-old woman involved in the plot to kill the president. obviously the Subgenius Foundation is in possession of certain information that maybe we should be looking into as a committee for destruction of any...
Materialize in the space above Palmer. Your sleeping parlor, and it shall indeed be bloody. It shall be dripping with the residual blood formed earlier in the day when he was without the word of Bob.
What are we going to do about the bloody head of Arnold Palmer? What the hell are we going to do about the bloody head of Arnold Palmer? That's what I want to know. His crimson head. I've seen it in my nightmares. I've been seeing omens and signs. We've got to do something about the bloody head of Arnold Palmer. These guys are talking bad on Bob. Neither them or the Christians we got to start with. We got to do something bad for both of them.
Knowing that God has given us charge. And we're going to take charge of that helm right now in the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth. I send the angel of the Lord. I send right now power, the very glory of God into that home. I move back the foul spirits of opposition, the lying spirits, the binding spirits. I speak authority to you in the name of Jesus Christ.
Don't ask any questions. Just do as I say. All right?
We're pretty sure he's a psychopath.
Now, how do we spot it?
Well, if he's wearing a Napoleon hat, it's easy. Otherwise, they come in all sizes and shapes. 11-year-old girls, 80-year-old men. Yeah, they all look perfectly normal.
I keep telling y'all, this is a sick and perverted nation. All kinds. And nobody wants to listen to me. Nobody wants to hear about Bob. But I'm trying to tell everybody what's going on, and they won't listen to me. Well, to tell you the truth, I can't stand it anymore. Bob. Bob, take care of him, Bob. Just do away with them all. I don't want them anymore. They're the problem, illusion of my mind after all. They don't love you, Bob. They don't love you like I do.
And the fear behind it. It's not just the wars and the awards that win them. It's not just a dull, empty distaste for a smothered culture that expires all around you and cools at its own wastes. It's not just the terminal foes of Nunu. It's not just the child zombies that murder their mediocritan parents and then cruise the streets with bloody feet. It's not just those starry old vecs on the park benches with looks on their faces like those who shuffled out of the boxcar of Belsen Auschwitz. It's not just the anesthesiologist for needy. It's not just the heaving pink meat masses that grope and clutch all around you. It's not just the dino bones for Woven. It's not just the broken headlight, snapped antenna, and human excrement on your car hood. It's not just that the old ways were best. It's not just the bastardization and perversion of every honest means of self-expression. It's not just the killer shit gunner from the dark side of the bush. It's not just the penoid snipers locking and loading on every high-rise rooftop. It's not just the widescreen Technicolor corporate daisy chain that has defiled the entire planet. It's not just Mongo in the Congo with fa-fa-fa the size of basketballs. It's not just the prophets crying lonely and alone in the wilderness. It's not just the indignity of having to work for some bland, non-entity son of a bitch who thinks workers are property. It's not just the blueness of the wound cleansed by evil. It's not just the babbling eco-freaks who want to go back to nature without realizing that nature is an open ditch latrine in midsummer. It's not just some asshole with a pipe and a shit-eating I-know-more-than-you-do dog grin all over his homogenized face. It's not just the horrible feeling of being entrapped inside a regimented, evolving world that you certainly never made. It's not just the doorway to doom. It's not just wanting to know what the hell is really going on. It's not just the missing H's or the stolen Alpha Betamax. No, dear friends, there is more to it all than that. Bob ain't no nickel-dime bum show. I put it to you, he's on the square and a corking fine business proposition. He's the grandest thing yet, and don't you forget it. Shout salvation and fighting Jesus, you'll need to rise precious early, you sinner there, if you want to diddle the almighty Bob. No, he's got top mixture with a punch on it for you, my friend. In his back pocket. Just you try it.
Well, pretty heavy material there.
Yeah, let your breath out.
Yeah.
Just relax. That was a straight propagandistic dogma for Bobby.
You can certainly see where people are vulnerable when, you know, maybe down, don't have slack, and then get hit over the head with something like that.
A strong
voice.
They
crumble. Interesting music. Do you know where that music is from?
The very last bit or earlier?
That last bit with the spoken word segment.
Yeah.
It's by a German band called Kraftwerk.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very early helping
with that. Andrew Patterson fucking he loves that move. Uh-huh. He celebrates it in old interviews in Now Magazine in 1981. And now he's, what is he doing? He's writing for Impulse Magazine. Oh, those little incestuous green screen bohos. Oh, we're going to wipe them off. Yeah, Kraftwerk. That's right. You're right there, Mike.
Okay, Bob.
Did you have something to say?
No, you have something to say.
Yeah. Let's see. I think that last bit that was mm-hmm. very strong and effective, I think that was a tape of me about 1963.
63?
Yeah, I think it was right after Kennedy was assassinated.
Yeah.
That is an actual documented footage of me meditating with Stang and a few pinks around, mingling with the subgenius in a local coffee house in Tangiers, I think it was.
Yeah, yeah, it had that, I don't know, that beat sound.
Early atmosphere, pre-video recorders, pretty computer.
Kenneth Patchen, really deep voice, you know, yeah. Sounded good, Bob.
Yeah, like New York Lower East Side.
Yeah, yeah.
Lower East
Side. A lot of people snapping their fingers.
Yeah, then the folks wondering what to do. How are they going to get any attention, you know? Frank circling up with his surfer songs and then getting aborted. All right. So, well, yeah, we got some knowledge. I want to give out some particular Bob knowledge. Again, I've been criticized for commenting on the American environment, but as I explained 2 weeks ago, the American environment is a world environment. We're all involved in it, whether we like it. All right?
We like it.
All right, now I'm going to explain something about the Bush Dukakis. I've said that they're run by the same people. I'm going to prove that. All right? In other words, they're running under funding by the same law firms.
Right, and we talked about this a few weeks ago, didn't we? And Ken...
Yeah, well, I explained the solar government to various broad levels, but I'm going to explain the particular pink funding for these two campaigns and how there is no competition within it. Now, follow this. This may take some visual training. You know, follow the thoughts, connect them together like beads. There are three law firms in Boston involved. One is called Hale and Dorr. The second is Hill and Barlow. And the third is Mintz and Levin. Now, to begin, I would say, I make a general statement that these three law firms are part of an incestuous group which put together the National Economic Commission and the American Agenda, two group titles, and fund the New York Council on Foreign Relations. They also fund both Dukakis and Bush. Now, how you put it together, as I rattle the documents here, Hale and Dorr, the first law firm, Dukakis was a partner of that law firm way back when he graduated from Harvard. The present chairman of that Dukakis campaign is now a senior partner at Hale and Dorr. Now, what's interesting, Dukakis' chief economic advisor is Harvard professor Lawrence Summers, but he's a protege of Bush's advisor, Martin Feldstein, okay? And this guy, Professor Summers, his wife works under Dukakis' chairman, Paul Bruntis, at Hale and Dorr. Now, we then look at another aspect of Hale and Dorr, this law firm. Their major clients are Prudential Life Insurance and W.R. Grayson Company. Both are very involved with the Bush campaign. Now, remember, this is the law firm that Dukakis' chairman is coming from, right? But their clients are involved with Bush. We then go to the second, to keep it simple, we go to the second law firm, Hill and Barlow, and their senior partner and hiring director, Daniel Taylor, is the Dukakis campaign's counsel, or lawyer, or advisor. Hill and Barlow is another firm that Dukakis worked for. He jumped around these Boston law firms. He worked with that firm in from 60 to 64, and then from 71 to 73. Now, while he worked at that firm, which is the second one I'm talking about, Hill and Barlow, he supervised the work of William F. Weld, then fresh out of Harvard Law School. Now, Weld himself is being considered for Attorney General by George Bush. All right, so Dukakis is monitoring and babysitting this guy, Weld, who is going to be considered by the Bush administration. Now, Weld himself, okay, he was monitored by Dukakis several years ago, but now Weld has moved to the first law firm called Hale and Dorr, which I just mentioned, which are the main people behind Dukakis' campaign. All right, so he's moved to the first law firm, Hale and Dorr. Now, the third law firm, Mimpson Levin, is backing very heavily Dukakis financially and politically. And the main guy in that firm, Francis Meany, is Dukakis' top fundraiser for the past several campaigns. However, the clients handled by Meany as working for Mimpson Levin, the third law firm we're talking about, they include Credit Suisse White Weld, which is the family firm of William Weld that is financially linked to the Bush campaign, this Weld being the man who works for the main funder of Dukakis, Hale and Dorr, the first law firm, and also was tutored by Dukakis himself. But Meany is working now for Dukakis. But Meany has as his clients Brown Brothers Harriman, and Brown Brothers Harriman was set up by George Bush's maternal grandfather. All right, George Bush's maternal grandfather founded Brown Brothers Harriman with the late Averell Harriman. Now, Harriman's widow, Pamela Churchill Harriman, who, daughter of Winston Churchill, remember him? Radio man, right? Pamela Churchill Harriman, the daughter of a man who was involved with the founding of Brown Brothers and Harriman with Bush's family antecedents, right? His maternal grandfather, that woman, Pamela Harriman, is the main controller of the Dukakis campaign. Hey, doesn't it get tight?
And of course, Bush is related to the Queen.
Yes.
You can't forget about that.
That's because he was Reagan's vice president, probably, and Reagan was rumored to be related to the Queen back in 1980, right? So the Queen is very important. And don't forget, when John Turner in 1984 took over the reins of power from Pierre Trudeau, he immediately ran off and talked to Buckingham Palace before he could even govern for 2 months, right? And don't forget, Ronald Reagan, when he left Gorbachev in the summit in May, the big Moscow summit, he didn't go directly to the States. He went to Buckingham Palace, reported in first to Mother. And Mother is the code word in the CIA for authority, for authorization of memos. All right? And if you saw the TV show A Very British Coup,
I saw the second part of it.
No, you didn't see the last one where he gave a speech and a very good ending.
I think I saw it in the third. With three parts of the show?
Yeah, three parts.
I saw the third part then. That's right.
Right. Where do you notice when they showed him giving his revolutionary speech, unscripted, and they showed the lapels of Buckingham Palace? That was the Queen, or they talked about it as a king then, which would be Prince Charles in the 1990s. There you had, not showing the face like they weren't allowed to show Jesus' face in the 50s in the movies, right? But they implied royalty's monitoring this politician's actions. And that movie did, I don't want to get too far from the law firm, we're going to get back to the law firm thing, but that movie resonated a lot with what Gorbachev was doing this week, blowing off bombs with media coverage, which is what he did in the movie A Very Pretty Scoop. But back to this group, where how connected Bush is to the Dukakis group, the main backers of Bush are Robert Mosbacher of Mosbacher Energy in Texas, John Hennessy, chairman of Credit Suisse White Weld, which is the firm that Weld is represented by, John Massey, managing director of Solomon Brothers, Louis Eisenberg, partner of Goldman Sachs, Seymour Knox, chairman of Kidder and Peabody, Morris Zuckerman, managing director of Morgan Stanley, and R.I. Ireland, partner of Brown Brothers Harriman, whose Bush's maternal grandfather started. That whole group is supporting Bush. But you have a guy who is a top Dukakis fundraiser, Michael Del Giudice. Michael Del Giudice, former chief of staff to Governor Mario Cuomo of New York. So don't get too excited about Cuomo. In 1992, he's connected to the same network. This guy, Del Giudice, is a partner in Lazard Frères. And Lazard Frères is heavily involved in supporting Bush because they financed Bush's early Texas oil career. All right? And the mother, well, Catherine Meyer Graham presently runs the Washington Post. Her father financed Bush's Texas oil career along with, well, he was a member of Lazard Frères at that point. His name was Eugene Meyer, and he did it along with Brown Brothers Harriman. Now, his daughter, Meyer's daughter, is supporting Dukakis, Washington Post lady. So did I make that all connected? I mean, if I look back at the chart here, you got three firms, Hale and Dorr, Hill and Barlow, Mintz and Levin. And you see that, oh, it's just too, it's like spaghetti looking at this chart. I can't break it apart. I hope you followed me.
Maybe you should offer transcripts of a show, too, to those who are interested.
Or maybe Xeroxes. No, that requires mailing. Yeah.
Money.
Right. So you, I think all the names that I put together, Weld, his Dukakis' main guys, all interconnected. So how can it sounds like they're running this election campaign out of the TV studio, you know, with two competing news commentators or something, right? And actually, they work for the same network, the same television broadcasting system.
Yeah.
So did you follow whatever?
Some of the information with regards to the law firms, but I'm seeing the connection.
You felt the connection.
Yeah.
You could see that it was very close. I mean, Dukakis has worked for the law firm that pretends that it's backing Bush.
Any dirt on Dukakis' running mate?
Oh, yes. I was looking up some old stuff. He was a key controlled senator in 1976 under the Rockefellers Council of Foreign Relations, which is the original thing. Ah, this falls full circle. The Council of Foreign Relations is what these two law firms groups called the National Economic Commission and the American Agenda, they're funding the New York Council of Foreign Relations. And the Council of Foreign Relations had as its member Senator Lloyd Bentsen, and therefore he was a Rockefeller man in 76. So does that mean Dukakis is Rockefeller versus the Rothschild Bush? I don't know. It's so mixed up with the doubles and organic robotoids, you can't tell. But I think they're so entwined. The names are meaningless. The law firms are the fondo. That's a term I'll use occasionally. The fondo are the oligarchic family trusts that go back to at least the Congress of Vienna, which was in 1815. The recent management of the world for these law firms is called the fondo. And as you can see, these fondo are heavily controlling both candidates.
Did you read the recent issue of recent issue of Time magazine, the cover story on Dukakis, and they had a chart on the inside comparing Dukakis and Bentsen, and the two are just so diametrically opposed in every way. Did you see that chart? And I mean, all the way down to, I mean, Time carried it a little too far. They compared clothing and
style,
homes and salaries
lifestyle,
and what they like to eat and do. But I mean, as far as policies go, just diametrically opposed, you know.
So it's designed for power voting blocks. I mean, it's not, their policies are irrelevant.
Oh, yeah, but it's interesting to see how they, we talked about this before, how they shunned Jackson, and, you know, he went for the votes.
He didn't go for the votes, he went for the law firms.
Apparently.
He had to sign up for the law firm.
Well, I've given you an extra, almost 8 minutes today.
Oh, that's great, Mike.
How are you taking calls tonight?
Phone in. Bob, what is it, 595?
Let's call the other line, okay?
Well, we can't give out that number, can we?
Oh, that's all right, sure.
Well, how about they call in 595-1655, and I'll tell them to call the other line, and we'll let it free for your callers.
Oh, okay, sure.
So 595-1655. I don't know who's monitoring us, Mike. I'm not making any mistakes.
I see. That's a good point. Yeah. Well, you'll be back in 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks. Regularly pretty well for every second week.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Good to have you back, Bob.
And, good to see you, Mike. Feeling wonderful.
That ends this week. This week's installment of the Church of the Subgenius with J.R. Bob Dobbs and myself, Mike. And
let's see how the Guinness Book of Records handles my...
Yes, fill us in on that in 2 weeks.
My happiness. So can we go up with the theme? Or have you got some other music?
I've got some other music.
Okay, no theme. 2 weeks, the theme will be back.
We'll do it.
Did you know that about 90% of today's music is ignored by major record labels? My name is Kevin Press, and every Thursday night from 11 p.m. to 12 midnight, I play that 90% on a program I call The Voice. Hear a variety of music styles by independent artists from around the world. The Voice also includes interviews, specials on specific independent labels, and monthly features including Real People, an hour dedicated to music on cassette, and Faster Faster, the best in independent rock and roll. So I hope you can tune in as The Voice every Thursday from 11 p.m. to 12 midnight on CKLN FM 88.1 in Toronto.
Who shot the Pope? Other people